You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
From the depths of pop culture rises a beast of unimaginable obsession to wreak havoc on the podcasts of man. This is the Giganticast.
Matt, you're alive.
Oh my god.
We have survived the pandemic.
We've survived it?
Okay, we're surviving it, okay?
We're surviving
we're
it.
We're in the middle of it. Technically speaking, neither of us might pull through.
hopefully, we'll come out the other side.
Yeah.
Relatively unscathed. Relatively. But, yeah, it has been a while since I've done a Giganticast. It's been a while since you and I have done one.
No.
Last one we did was sometime last year, back when life was simpler. No, it wasn't.
That was back when we thought 2020 was going to be a good year.
I don't think any of us thought any year moving forward was going to be good.
All right, let me rephrase it. We had hope. We had just a little bit of hope. But, yeah, it was when we did Ultra Q and the original Ultraman, which at the time was kind of a revelation for me, because I've always been a huge giant monster fan. I watched Godzilla throughout my entire childhood. That's largely why I got into film. But somehow, I completely missed the boat on Ultraman until Mill Creek started putting out these re-releases. And I've basically pre-ordered each one as they've come out. And I've been working my way through them as they release. I'm still part way through Ultraman Geed, the prequel to Orb, and Return, because I also watched them with my kid. But it's been kind of an emotional roller coaster. It's been really fun and weird seeing the newer releases, because they're putting out the new stuff that's relatively in the last couple of years modern, at the same time as they're putting out this archival, like, this is the true blue where Ultraman started stuff. And it's such a surreal experience to watch, like, an episode of Ultraman Orb and then turn around and watch an episode of Ultra 7 and just be like, how the hell did you guys get from there to here? I'm so intrigued.
That's a very interesting perspective, because as we talked about in our last one, you know, I've been attached to Ultraman in some way since I was a little kid, because I was fortunate enough that, to start coming up in an era when, I was already attached pretty heavily to the kaiju fandoms, especially in zine form. Like, I'd get G-Fan magazine and stuff, and they would talk about Ultraman and that. It was still pretty hard to find, but I was always vaguely aware of the character and the franchise. I remember very specifically hunting down, like, VHS tapes of Ultraman, and I remember seeing commercials for Ultraman Towards the Future, the Australian English-language Ultraman series that did play on American television in the 90s as sort of around the same time Power Rangers was coming out. Unfortunately, it didn't make it past 13 episodes because Ultraman is sort of for a long time, Ultraman was sort of a hard sell for American audiences.
It's a unique character and take, especially in this genre. Like, it's weird to watch the show and see them in the beginning be very nationalistic and anything that is not human is evil and trying to invade us, and starting to soften that approach. And it's kind of like watching Japan themselves grow and develop their culture as you watch the show.
That's another really interesting perspective, because, like, again, this idea, like, you're coming from it from the perspective of, you know, you're watching it in real time play out in the original series, and then jumping ahead to the modern stuff, which I can't wait for you to see Ultraman X.
I'm so excited.
I'm hoping that even with everything going on right now, you know, people are still going to be consuming home media. They're still going to be, I mean, everyone's stuck inside, so all we have time to do is to binge watch stuff. And so hopefully, you know, Blu-rays and DVDs will still keep coming out as, you know, as people, we need media to consume.
We shall see. I was telling a friend today even that, like, yeah, I think I have three separate Blu-ray pre-orders that I've done. Two Ultraman and then a couple of others that all are supposed to arrive in the next 2 months. And I don't know if any of them are actually coming. I'm like, I don't know. I'll get them at some point in the next 6 months, probably. Hopefully on time, but maybe not.
Well, I mean, you know, it's all pretty weird, and I think it's important that everybody have a little bit of patience right now, because most of my stuff that I order arrives on time. But, you know, there are certain things where it's like, well, this one's going to take a little longer. And I'm like, that's fine. It's fine. Or Amazon, although as of this recording, I believe the Amazon workers just went on strike.
They did. So, today.
Which to be fair, good for them, because Amazon treats them like garbage and should be paying them more.
We actually even have some friends who shall be unnamed, since this is a public forum, who are working for there, and I've kind of been very much curious to ask them, like, are you still working? I want to know.
You a scab?
But no, like, because it's Ultraman X, which I'm really intrigued, because that seems to be a relatively major event in the Ultra franchise. And then Ace is the classic series that's coming out, because they seem to be doing them in pairs, which all I know about Ace is the one that I'm going to watch before I show my son, because I've YouTube clips of Ace, and that's where they pull monsters into various parts. And the dichotomy between what is an American kid show and what is a Japanese kid show becomes very apparent.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's Ultraman Ace is very, I don't want to go too far down Ultraman Ace, because eventually I'm sure we'll talk about it, but Ace is very, it's got a lot of wacky stuff in it, but we're not talking about Ace, nope. We're not talking about X.
We're talking about Ultra 7.
Which
it's an interesting watch, because, like you said, I'm kind of going through and I'm experiencing it for the first time, and you can really tell for the first time that the guys behind the scenes of the Ultra franchise they're starting to fire on full speed, you know? Because with Ultra Q, it was very much that Outer Limits-esque show. Sometimes there were monsters. They didn't always solve it through combat. And then Ultraman brought in the famous formula. But, like, as much as I even remember talking about this during our podcast, as much as I really enjoyed a lot of Ultraman, a lot of it was also, I love seeing the birth of some of this. Whereas coming from a modern sensibility, like, there's definitely some hurdles you have to leave. And it was really fun watching them handle an Ultra show with a budget. Because right out of the gate, Ultra 7 is shot so significantly better than the previous two franchises. Like, you can tell that they have some extra money, at least initially, where they're going, like, no, we're going to put a giant sun in the background, and this entire climactic action sequence is happening at sunset in profile. And they start doing things like that. Or they even did what blew me away and have Ultraman several times not even go big. He's just like, yeah, now I'm the size of a person, because that's the only thing I need to be right now. I don't need to be giant. And seeing that happen, I was like, I didn't even know an Ultra could do that. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's something that I always, especially as a kid, would get really excited about when an Ultra was human size, because it was very, like, it was A, like you said, it was a very rare event, and B, you're watching, it's kind of like watching Power Rangers, like he's getting to kind of kick ass on a human level, and he's, and it gets, it makes him a little more relatable and approachable. One of my favorite gags from Ultraman Tiga, which I'm sure we'll eventually get, when Ultraman is human size and he's rescued a bunch of people that are in like this, it's like they're in these kind of capsules or something. It was a whole alien plot. And one of the characters says, "It's Ultraman." And then another character turns around and he's looking up, like he just automatically looks up. And it makes it's a very pointed moment where that's the gag, is that he would not have expected Ultraman to be human sized. And I just really appreciated the inherent physical comedy of that. But it's interesting because on the subject of Ultra 7 specifically, this series is kind of near and dear to me because this was actually technically the first Ultra series I saw a significant amount of, because I could, because of course at the time when I was growing up, Ultraman, like you were lucky if you found like 4 episodes on a VHS, like anniversary release, or you're lucky if you found like Ultraman Great on VHS somewhere, which is Ultraman Towards the Future. But for the most part, you couldn't find it except for Ultra 7, which was on TNT at 4 in the morning, San Antonio time.
All right.
And my grandmother, bless her heart, had no problem getting up at 4 in the morning to record the show for me.
Oh my God, you made your grandmother do that? You
heartless man. I didn't make her do anything.
See, at the very least, when I got really into the Roughneck Chronicles and Sailor Moon, I woke my ass up at 5 a.m. so I could watch those when I was a kid.
I eventually started doing that myself when I realized this is fucked up and I shouldn't be doing this. She actually, like, she made it clear that you know what? She's my grandma. She would have done whatever I wanted. And eventually I was like, all right, grandma, you don't have to get up at 4 in the morning anymore. I can do it.
It would have made me so happy if you found out years later that, like, no, she kept doing it. She was just a huge Ultra fan at that point. And so she just woke up every day at 4 a.m. so she could watch it her damn self.
She actually, it's so funny you say that, because she used to record lots of stuff for me. And the big thing that she would record for me is Dragon Ball Z. And she actually really started getting into Dragon Ball. I mean, she could never remember any of their names, but she was like, the green guy and the guy with the widow's peak. And
oh, God, I know who that is.
Yeah, Piccolo and Vegeta, yes. So anyway, so as a result, Ultra 7 was a really big gateway drug for me into the Ultra franchise. I also remember seeing clips of Ultra 7 on Space Ghost Coast to Coast and Cartoon Planet, which is so funny because I actually found those episodes they used those clips of for Space Ghost Coast to Coast, and they're on iTunes, and so I downloaded those episodes and I watched them, and they replaced the footage with something some public domain BS, and I know it's because Turner probably got a letter from Tsuburaya or somebody saying you can't use that footage anymore. So there's your little insider baseball. But yeah, Ultra 7 is the third in the Ultra franchise, which gets a little confusing for some people, because I remember when Morgan was first learning about Ultraman, she was like, no, wait, isn't Ultra 7 the seventh franchise? Yeah. And I'm like, no,
yeah,
it's not. it's the third.
The way I've taken to explaining Ultraman to non-Ultra people is like, look, it's like Japanese Doctor Who. You know, there's a bunch of them. They've been going on for like 50 years and just, they're all different. Just go with it. Just go with it.
Yeah, of course. It's one of those things where, yeah, you kind of got to roll the punches with Ultraman, and especially Ultra 7, because like you said, they really started hitting their stride at this point. I personally think that the storytelling in Return of Ultraman is where things really started to ramp up, where they were really starting to learn character arcs and changing status quos and things like that. Ultra 7 is still very episodic in a lot of ways, although there are a couple of two-parters.
You know, they do a good job of conveying kind of the universal story, but you are right. And it's my biggest complaint of Ultra 7 as a show. It was the same issue I had with Ultraman, which is that Ultra 7 isn't actually much of a character. Like, he's the main character now, unlike the original Ultraman, where I kind of felt like the hero was like, oh, he was just another character, and you would lose him in the group if he wasn't turned into Ultraman. Ultra 7 doesn't have that. They do a lot better of a job of making you understand, like, this is the main character of the show, and he had good stories, but he still doesn't really have much of a character outside of being Ultraman. I'm actually really interested in Return, because I know that that's one of the first times they start actually building out the human side of it and having him have a personality outside of being just an awesome hero.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because he's in both, and this is something that my buddy Hiroshi Kanatani pointed out to me, in both Ultraman and Ultra 7, the main character, the Ultra, he's an alien. Like, even though Ultraman inhabits the body of Hayata, by the end of the series it's sort of revealed that, oh, he was just Ultraman that whole time.
Yeah, he like took
he
over.
He took over and he had Hayata's memories and everything, but he was basically, Hayata was basically asleep the whole time, and that was how Ultraman saved his life. The morality of that is dubious, but and Ultra 7 is very much like, he came to Earth, he took the form of a human, which I thought was really interesting that they made an episode of Ultra 7 where they address where he got his human form of Dan Muraboshi. And it's because there was a mountain climber who basically was willing to sacrifice his own life to save his friend because they were, you know, in a precarious, sort of a cliffhanger situation. So he cut his own line, essentially, to save his friend's life. Ultra 7 saves him, and he's like, this homeboy here, he's got a good heart. I'll take his face to honor his memory, or what? Not his memory, because the guy was dead, but he took his face to honor this guy, which, again, morally dubious, but
And they also, they do something that I thought was interesting, which they reveal that not in the beginning. They reveal that in episode 17. And it's kind of been the thing that's been nagging at the back of my mind throughout as I've been watching these Ultra shows. Because, so like at this point, I've seen Ultraman Max, Ultra 7, Ultraman Q, Jesus, I've seen a lot, Orb, and about half of Geed. But with the exception of Return of Ultraman, like, the Ultra people just kind of show up. And in Geed, they kind of build the whole story around that, so that's different. But every other one, like, it's just, oh yeah, he's there now, all of a sudden. And this was the first time, aside from that Ultraman original the Ultraman original episode, where they finally sat down and went, okay, guys, look, this is what the Ultra people are doing. And it was nice to watch that because it gave me context for every other Ultra show that I've been watching, where it's like, okay, I finally understand what's happening here. And then watching the beginning of Return of Ultraman, it's like, okay, I'm starting to understand why these Ultra people just show up all of a sudden and work with the military to save the day. I get who they are.
Right. It's yeah, hearing you say that is very interesting to me, because I mean, they're basically like the Lantern Corps. Their job is to patrol space. They're literally, they're called, the organization that the Ultras all belong to is called the Space Garrison. And they're very like, and what exactly their jurisdiction is also up for debate, but it'll be very interesting to see what you think of Ultraman Mabius or Mobius, as it's supposed to be. Mabius is the Japanese pronunciation of the word Mobius, but it's technically Ultraman, whatever. Anyway, it'd be very interesting to see your reaction to Mabius, because that whole series is about building on the Showa era, the original series of Ultraman, because the show is from 2006, but it was made as a sequel to this original cycle of Ultra series. And it's about a young Ultraman coming to Earth essentially as a rite of passage.
Yeah. I'm really intrigued for the Showa to Heisei era. That transition that happens, because you know, with Godzilla, you have such a distinctly different flair for the Showa era films. As you move into the Heisei films, they're just completely different. Tonally, the way they handle the storytelling, the design work, and like, I only having seen the modern era, which I want to call Millennium era, even though it's not Godzilla, and the Showa era stuff, like, I can see the storytelling has evolved, and of course, like, the tech has. Like, I remember even telling you that so far Orb has been my favorite, and I immediately felt the need to clarify that, even though I haven't gotten a chance to now. I think Return so far has been some of my favorite storytelling. But I think Seven is maybe my favorite overall series that I've finished so far. Well, I love the action in the new stuff, because they figured out at that point how to shoot small scale from the human perspective and make the monster fights look giant and epic and mix. And you can see them start to figuring that out here, like the aforementioned episode where they have the entire thing take place at sunset. Like, that is a legitimately gorgeous episode, even by today's standards. And so, but I was just going to say that it's nice seeing them start to up their game from a cinematography standpoint. And you can see them going, okay, we've now done giant monsters for a billion movies and, you know, close to 100 episodes. So we kind of know how to shoot this now. Although I was reading in the backstory of this, and it was interesting, and I keep using that word, I apologize, but it was fun to read how the actual Ultra 7 show struggled a bit, because it came out and they were very much pushing alternative storytelling. Not every episode had a giant monster. Ultraman doesn't always turn big. And how that turned off a lot of their target audience of children. And so you have this shift in the show where the more unique Outer Limits-esque storytelling kind of goes away, and it becomes a lot more Monster of the Week. And it was interesting watching this with my son. Like, he was demanding we watch Ultraman episode by episode, and he made it about halfway into this show. And then he started getting pulled by the allure of Orb and Geed, and I was left mostly to my devices to finish this on my own, just because he was so enamored with the new stuff.
Right. That is very interesting because the newer stuff is definitely like they've got it down to a science as far as like how to target the children, how to get them all jazzed about the toys and the little doodads and the tchotchkes, as my friend Lee calls them. And that being said, Seven definitely has. Okay, so it's funny you say about how Seven sort of had a little trouble because it alienated the audience a little bit. That's so funny to hear someone say out loud, because people fucking love Ultra Seven. Like, there are people in Japan who, and people I know, my personal friends, who are just Ultra 7 fans. Like, they don't really give a shit about any of the rest of the franchise. They're like, oh, is 7 in it? No, I don't care. And there's just something about it. There's something about the aesthetic of the show and the approach to storytelling, that slightly more mature edge, still kind of that weird retro goofiness that makes the series so fun. But it's just fascinating to talk to people, because there are people who are such diehard fans, just as the aliens from the show, like characters like Gut Sajin and what's his name? Pegasus Agent, I think, is what his name is. There's a bunch of... I mean, I've got the list right here. Icarus Sajin, Spell Sajin. Oh, Spell Sajin. That's actually a fun little cul-de-sac. So this is actually not the complete series.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, there is an episode. It's episode 12. And it is actually not available in any form, home video or otherwise. According to the Ultra Wiki, it was banned in Japan because it offended Hibakusha, which are people who were victims of atomic bombings, due to the design of the Spell Seijin, which resembles an atomic bomb survivor, including keloid scarring. Now, it's not really clear whether or not the organizations, based on what I've heard, it's not really documented whether or not those organizations and support groups and stuff were really truly offended, but I think that word kind of trickled over to Tsuburaya at some point, and rather than risk people being offended, they just decided, screw it, we're just cutting our losses and we're just going to ban the episode. But yeah, it is the episode was regarded in somewhat poor taste because Hibakusha are, or at least at the time, I'm not sure how things stand now necessarily, but at the time they were subject of discrimination in Japan because, you know, people thought maybe they were cursed or, you know, it's not like we're dealing with anything similar to that nowadays at all.
Because people are wonderful to each other always. I don't know what you're talking about.
Always. Interestingly, it actually was shown on the TNT English dub. The episode was called, like, something corpuscules, like corrupting corpuscules or something, and the monsters, the aliens, were just vampiric and they wanted children's blood or something. But in the Japanese version, how does it go? I think they need human blood because their blood is so is poisonous and toxic because of all the nuclear war that happened on their home world. So they're trying to steal the children's blood so that they can... Is that what it is? I try to remember this.
I honestly can't help you because this is one of the episodes I obviously did not see.
It's a wackadoo. It's totally wackadoo.
Well, you mentioned that there are a lot of fans of, like, just the alien creation, for example. I think that Ultra 7, out of all of the ones I've seen, minus one particular design that I'll mention off mic, is, I think, my favorite designed show of them. Because they still stretch their legs a lot with the monsters. Because one of the things that I have that's kind of an issue with the newer shows is there's a tendency to call back a lot. And so, you know, the Ella King will show up. And it's like, oh, cool, it's him. I've seen him in four different shows now at this point, and because I'm watching them back to back, the allure goes away. I think that this is maybe my favorite Ultraman design. It's second favorite, because that's the thing that Gee does really well. It has my second favorite Ultraman design. A lot of the monsters are really interesting and unique, and you stop seeing how obviously they took another suit and just modified it. Because, like, that was the thing in watching Ultraman. even my son will notice. He'll, like, he doesn't see the monster that Ultraman fights. He sees Godzilla. And it's like, that's Godzilla. Right. It's like, yeah, that actually is Godzilla. They just put a frill on him. Good eye.
Yep.
That stops happening. And so you get to see a lot more, like, really wacky, just batshit insane kind of monster designs that they just kind of go for broke with, and it works. And I'm sure even a lot of those may be callbacks to other stuff. Like, I still can't believe they made an episode with the space dragon monster like
the doofy dragon.
It's just like it's a puppet. It's a poorly done puppet on strings, and it works.
That character is referenced so often in merchandising. It's considered like kind of a legacy character, or at least a minor legacy character, Narce or Nurse. And I had never seen that episode until this Blu-ray came out. So I was watching it and watching the episode, and I'm like, this episode's pretty good so far. Like, I'm actually kind of digging it. It's a very dramatic episode. It's very, like, there's a lot of manly tears in it. Until you get to that goddamn dragon, and it's just, like, flopping around with its floppy little arms, and it's like, "Hey, the doofy dragon!" And I couldn't believe it. I could not believe, like, this is Nurse, this is Narce, this is this thing that is literally hanging up in the Kaiju Sakaba in Tokyo. Like, technically Kawasaki, but it's all kind of Tokyo now. That aside, though, there is a roughness to the early monster stuff that comes with the territory. And in fact, I was actually talking to some folks in Japan recently who were telling me about how the suit actors, a lot of the same suit actors would do double duty. They would go do a Toho film, they'd go do a Daiei film, they'd go do a Tsuburaya TV show. So they'd jump around from production to production, including Haruo Nakajima himself. You know, he played several Ultraman monsters and I think a few Ultra 7 monsters. The suit actors always liked playing Ultraman monsters more than Toho monsters, like Godzilla monsters, because the suits were always so much looser, and they could just flop around in them. They were much more comfortable to wear, as opposed to the Godzilla suit, which is, like, claustrophobia central. Cool. And I just think that's an interesting little tidbit. But, what are some of your... Oh, wait, before I get into that, one thing I wanted to backtrack on was the episode we were talking about, which was the one with the sunset episode.
Yeah.
That is the Metron Seijin episode. I believe the title is The Town Under Siege or The Town Under Attack, something to that tune.
Something along those lines.
Yeah. And that episode is directed by Akio Josoji, and...
Oh, it's the marked town.
The marked town. The targeted town. The marked town. You know, there's a couple different translations, but... yes. That episode is, like I said, it's directed by Josoji, and Josoji is this, like, legendary director in Japan. I probably brought him up on our last episode, but... And Metron himself is, of course, a... You know, very popular character. He pops up a lot.
Yes, he does.
It's funny, if you go back and watch Ultraman Max and the episode where Metron shows up again, that I believe that episode is also directed again by the same director. He was directing Ultraman stuff well into the 2000s.
I didn't know that was done by the same director, but I know they shoot it in that same way. Like, it's almost like a remake of that episode is what it ended up feeling like. I actually saw the Max version first, and so it was kind of fun to go back through and watch the Ultra 7 version of that episode and go, oh, cool.
Yeah, that's what's so amusing to me about this is you're seeing monsters that have not shown up in the proper, the original canon yet as far as the releases are concerned. And that's what's going to be so exciting to see moving forward as to, like, what you're going to respond to and what you're going to be like, I know that guy. But yeah, I was actually very fortunate that I got to meet the actor who played Dan Moriboshi. His name is Moritsugi-san. I don't remember his first name. Where is it? Come on. I'm trying to... Well, it took me years. I just called him Dan for so long. It took me years to finally internalize his last name because it's almost identical. You know, Moritsugi, Moriboshi. What the hell? Where is it? Wow. I can't find it on the wiki. I'm sure it's here somewhere. Anyway.
You're looking for the actor who played Dan Moriboshi?
Yeah.
It's Koji Moritsugi.
Koji Moritsugi. Or is it Koji or Kojima?
So I'm looking in the book. It says Koji.
Uh-huh.
I apologize in advance for... Well, not in advance, but I apologize for what is probably a butchered pronunciation. but that's how he's credited in the book.
Okay. Well, like I said, I was very fortunate I got to meet him, and I found out some interesting stuff after meeting him. So apparently, he did all of the grunts and screams and yells that Ultra 7 does, which I thought was hilarious that he got to do that. I took a video and a picture with him where he did his duah, where he puts the eyeglasses on.
Yeah.
The ultra eye. And God, if he still has it, man, like it's like a gunshot, like just the blast out of him. And it actually made me jump when he did it. But anyway, so back to something I was asking earlier. Do you have a particular favorite monster or alien from this? Because I believe you said you hadn't said one already, had you?
Not explicitly. I like a lot of the monster design. You know, the ones that I lean to. So first of all, I ironically really enjoyed the alien Guts because they showed up in the same episode of Orb. Or sorry, they showed up in an episode of Orb and Ultra 7 on the same day as I was watching them both. And so it was fun to see like, oh yeah, this is something done just like 50 years later, completely differently. I also really liked Ella King in this. He's shown up a ton in other shows down the line. And so it was nice seeing him show up when the show was still, or when the franchise was still fresh. And I think kind of maybe one of my low keys. All right, one I'm going to throw out because I know it's a fan favorite, which I like King Joe a lot. But the one that I'm slightly embarrassed to admit, but I adored it, was the Dino Tank.
Oh, everybody loves Dino Tank. Kyoryu Senshi. Dino Tank is amazing.
Dino Tank
dinosaur
is
tank now.
it's the moment that I realized that the creators had started to really figure out what was going on. Because in Ultraman, that costume, I feel like it would not have looked as put together as it did. Like, it was still just like, yeah, you're half dinosaur, half tank. Go with it. Sure, why not? But it had a little bit more believability, and you could tell that they had learned a little bit more when they were constructing their suits. This also has, and I'm going to butcher the name, but Alien Eros? Eros? It's this Birdman.
I know what you're talking about.
It has a really cool design. Like, I ended up finding myself really starting to dig
Eros.
Some of the straight-up design of the monsters.
Well, I believe this is still when Toll Narita is still doing monster designs. And Narita-sensei if I'm remembering correctly, I have his art book. And it's an awesome art book because he's not really a character designer. He's actually an abstract artist. And he has this very inorganic way of the designing characters where he approaches them from a very just a weird direction using like geometric patterns or geology or just weird objects. And it's so interesting to see like something he would design from the beginning and see how it like goes from his design to screen. And so I believe he was the main guy designing all these monsters and stuff. And this really does, Iros really does look like something that he would design. It's a beautiful character.
And you can see them start playing with a lot of non-traditional monster designs, like the Nersei, or even the very first monster they fight. I think it's the very first monster, but they do a lot that are clearly, oh, that's a puppet. As opposed to a guy in a suit, which it's an interesting dynamic because, you know, there's no amount of believability, but the creature designs are always fun. And one of the things that Ultra 7 starts to do is that they start to throw in a little bit of the old Ultra Violence. And so when it is like a true blue Monster of the Week episode, they usually end up going out in reasonably dramatic fashion, and it's always kind of fun watching the monster get introduced initially in the episode, and you spend like half the episode going, all right, this is a kaiju episode. At some point he's going to pull off the head blade and he's going to throw it. What's going to get cut off? Is it going to be head? Is it going to be the arms? Is it going to be the tail? Is it going to be bisected? And it's always fun to see how that ends up, because the violence is, it skirts with being dramatically bloody. I think there was one, it might have even been Elekin, where he gets his head cut off and you can see like four frames of the blood bubbling up before they cut away and they don't show it. But like, you know, when they shot that, they were like, yeah, we're gonna like make it rain blood.
I think it was Elekin. I remember being kind of shocked when they cut off Elekin's head and just gore just spills out.
Well, and
it was,
and I was gonna say, there's one where Ultra Seven, he gets into a, and I can't remember the monster, and we might even be talking about the same thing. But he gets into a close-in battle, and instead of throwing the blade, he pulls it off his head and just does a slash and, like, cuts the throat of the monster. And there's just this lone wolf and cub four-foot spray of green blood that coats Ultra 7. And I can remember that's one of the early monster deaths, and that was the first time I went, oh, this is actually a pretty bloody show sometimes. And had this look over at my son going like, are you reacting? Because I'm freaking out right now. And he was totally cool with it. So I was like, okay, I can't make a big deal out of this, because then he will. But holy shit, we just saw that.
Well, it's so, and that's the thing that I think makes it really good for kids, because it's so unrealistic that it's become part of the style of the show. Like, no one's gonna be fooled that, and that's not the, that's also the point. Like, they're not trying to fool anyone. They're just trying to do something that looks fun and cool. And I'm just like, there's some episodes, is it this? No, it's not that one. And again, this is also when they really kind of ramped up the violence, because the original Ultraman is comparatively tame. And as we'll see, you know, with Return of Ultraman, and especially in Ultraman Ace, shit's about to get pretty slice and dicey, gory McGorryson, gory times. It's gonna be really fun. One thing I did want to bring up was some of the other characters, because I remember these characters really have stuck with me over the years, because I don't feel this. That is one thing I will count against Return of Ultraman. One of the few things I will say is that the characters in Return of Ultraman don't feel as immediately relatable.
They're kind of assholes.
Yeah, they're all kind of dicks. And as opposed to Ultra Garrison, where you can tell these characters really are struggling with, like, well, what's moral? How do we approach this correctly? How do we not screw up? And it's really interesting because, you know, you've got Dan, who's, well, he doesn't get a whole lot of character time, doesn't really get to show his chops off very much. He's a relatively nice guy. Like, he's fairly upbeat, especially in the first episode where he's almost puckish in a way.
I maintain that he is the least interesting human cast member. But I still think that Ultra 7 has a much more interesting cast than the previous one, and even some of the new shows.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Soga and Amagi, which is sort of it's sort of a tradition that there's two dudes and they're kind of bros, and they're like, they're in the, how do I put this? They're sort of a mini unit. Hold on, I'm actually trying to make sure I got everyone's names right. Soga, Amagi. Well, there's usually two or three dudes, and they're usually, they're kind of the bro clique. The character who is Ultraman is sort of on the outskirts of that. He's always kind of just on the outside of all the cliques. Of course, Furuhashi is probably the most immediately recognizable of all three because he's a little rounder faced, but he's also like the tough guy. He's kind of he gets that episode. It's all about him being from Hokkaido and how
he was my favorite guy. Wants
him to come home.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. I'm glad you said that because I really have a big soft spot for him. Let me remember the difference between Soga and Amagi.
Well, and Shigeru, sorry, I always want to use the character names, but Sendaio, he was one of the characters in the previous Ultra show. I think he was in Ultra Q as well, I want to say, but I might be remembering
wrong. Wait, which one is that one you're talking about?
His character is Shigeru Furuhashi. He's played by Sendaio, Doku Mamamushi, and I apologize again for my poor pronunciations. It's not my talent. But I know that he was in the original Ultraman show. I don't know if he was in Ultra Q. But like,
I'm actually looking it up now. I don't think he was in the original Ultraman. I'm not seeing anything about it. About this actor.
I thought he played...
Let me check.
I want to say he played like... Not literally the same character.
Oh, he was Arashi.
But he was the same kind of funny, plucky guy. And I only remember that because he was my favorite cast member in the original Ultraman, too. And so I was like, oh, shit, you're back.
That is really funny you say that because I never realized that he was the same actor. He plays Arashi in the original Ultraman, and he's back playing Furuhashi. That is amazing. That is so interesting. Actually, you just reminded me, speaking of the cast, Amagi, who is the, he's kind of the tallest guy in the crew. He's a tactician. By the way, the reason why Ultra 7 is called Ultra 7 is because he's the seventh honorary member of the Ultra Garrison.
Wait, really? I did not get that.
That was something they actually did not make entirely apparent in the original show, but they actually played it up in the dub.
You know, it's funny that the one thing I've noticed watching all the different Ultra shows is that at no point, usually, so far at least, does the Ultraman turn and go, hey, this is my name, call me this. But everyone just kind of low-key agrees to call everyone the same thing. Like, bad guys call him Ultra 7, good guys call him Ultra 7. Everyone calls Ultraman Orb, even though nobody talks to each other about what we're going to call him. And he never turns to the camera and goes, yo, call me Orb. We're calling Ultra 7. It's cool. Even the Ultra people.
That's really funny. I can't wait for you to see Ultra Amabius because I think some of that stuff comes up. Before I forget, though, before I lose my train of thought, Amagi is actually played by Ben Furuya, who was the suit actor who was the original Ultraman. This is his other big role he's known for. He had wanted to be a FaceTime actor for the most part, and he actually was really worried that he was going to be typecast as a suit actor when originally playing Ultraman, and he got to be a main character in Ultra 7. It's very interesting, and man, I have met him several times. He is real tall, like very tall, which was the reason why they chose him to be Ultraman. And on top of that, interesting bit of trivia, if you've ever seen Evangelion.
Yeah, I have actually.
The reason the Evas are so lanky and long-limbed and kind of weird-looking is because they are not just based on Ultraman, but specifically that original Ultraman. They're based on Ben Furuya's long limbs and kind of bent torso and long legs.
I had no idea that. That makes a lot of sense. It's been interesting rewatching. So I'm rewatching the Evangelion films right now, and it's nice to re-experience that story as an adult and finally get a lot of what's going on behind the scenes. That when we were all in high school and we see Evangelion for the first time, it's just like, oh yay, giant weird bio robots and religion. It's nice to see all the context now and understand it. It makes me really excited for that creator's Shin Ultraman.
Yes. Yeah, did you see the reveal of what Shin Ultraman is going to look like?
I've only seen the picture of the lanky Ultraman. This is why I thought of it, because it's so lanky. Standing in that village by the lake. Like there's like this one picture that circulated around, and I showed my son, because my son is obsessed with Shin Godzilla, even though he has never seen it, because it's political attack that he will not understand.
Yeah, it's gonna take him a hot minute before he fully appreciates Shin Godzilla. But you showed it to him, though? What was his reaction?
No, Shin Godzilla or Shin Ultraman?
No, Shin Ultraman.
Geeked out, was really excited to see it. Which, having seen Shin Godzilla and every other thing that creator has made that I've seen, I'm like, it may be a bit before you watch it.
We'll see. I don't think they'll let Anno make anything that is that in any way excludes children. Although, to be fair, they did make Ultraman Nexus, which I don't really recommend for kids. But that being said, that's why they made Ultraman kind of look like that, because they wanted to capture that weird lanky alienness, and they were also specifically basing that new design off of Tol Narita's original paintings of Ultraman with no color timer. And I think the name of that painting is an image of strength, justice, and hope or something. It's a very kind of up its own ass title, but I love it. I love it, how unironic it is, because that's the thing to remember is that there is very little irony in Japanese culture and pop culture by extension. I mean, there's some, but,
It's an amazingly earnest franchise. Even these early shows, which are very much, if you aren't human, you are therefore evil, they do a good job of still going, no, this is about something, and we want you to understand that this is about something. You're going to feel things when some of these monsters dies. It's not always happy. The show, to me, and this is even in the newer seasons, has always been, let's just be sincere and just go for it, instead of in any way being self-effacing or goofy or embarrassed by the weird brand that they have built up over 60 years.
My hope is that my wife and I can take a weekend and not interact with anyone, but just go down to my parents' beach house down in Port A, just load up on groceries, head down there for a couple of days, and just not interact with anybody. just be at the beach, and we just want to watch Ultraman shows. Just, like, binge Ultraman.
I'd be down for that. When I have... I was telling you before we recorded that I'm going to have a few days without the kids, because they are going to go spend... a couple of weeks with my parents, who have also been self-isolating, because yes, if you're listening to this, don't go out, isolate yourself. But I intend to tear through Return of Ultraman, because I've only seen like 4 episodes of that one. It's the show that I've had since the day it came out, and I've yet to tear into it.
Did you get to the Twin Tail and Gudon two-parter?
No. I've only made it,
you're about
like,
to hit it
3 or 4 episodes in.
You are gonna,
when everyone's being randomly a jerk to return to Ultraman. I guess they call him Zothy.
No. He is so Return of Ultraman is Jack.
Oh, that's right. Jack, sorry. But yeah, so I'm only a few into that. I've mainly been trying to clear out Ultra 7, just because, you know, the one thing that I appreciate the newer shows about, not the one thing, there are a few, but one of the ones is that they tend to be shorter. I've found that these original shows are across the board about 10 episodes more than I find that I want. I'm always like, you know, like this is good, but I'm finding a hard time watching 50 episodes in 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's unfortunately a common problem, because you have to remember at the time, this is also one of the reasons why these shows are so episodic, is that there's no reason for them not to be. The shows are made so that they can run in syndication for X number of months or whatever, and kids watching them at the time aren't going to care where they are in the story. They just want to see something new. And so it is honestly one of the reasons why, I mean, Super Sentai still does this, where, and I think by extension Power Rangers, where it's like a 50 episode show, which hits its stride by episode 10, especially nowadays, because like by episode 10 or 15, they already have their sixth Ranger and they already have 2 or 3 Megazords. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ.
Huh. Really, and you know, doing this? I mean, there's something to say for that, because my son, like watching it with him, all of them, Ultra 7 included, I always want to be like, no, we're going to watch the next one, because I got to watch them so I can talk about them with Matt. And he's like, no, I want to watch the one with the dragon in it, or I want to watch the one with King Joe. And I'm like, well, but we've already seen that. And he's like, I don't care. It was cool.
I don't care, Dad. You dumb motherfucker. It'd be amazing if he just pulled that on you out of nowhere. Just like, whoa, somebody needs a nap. Yeah, but anyway, one other thing I wanted to, and by the way, sorry folks, I'm a little more scatterbrained than usual. Just with everything going on, it's you know, it's been hard.
I feel like we both have to call out and be like, okay, caveat. Before we were recording this, Matt and I were going on at length about the fact that he and I have both had like really stressful, kind of shitty days, in a stressful, shitty time. And both of us are just sitting here, like barely pulling it together and aware of life.
I think we're doing pretty good though. You know, we're giving the people some good content. So that's what matters.
There we go. And it brought to you by gin and coffee. So there we go.
I was going to say, I downed my mocha, frappuccino or whatever it is. That being said, one of the other things I did want to talk about, because we're coming up on an hour, I wanted to talk about a few more quick things. The character of Anne Yuri is very interesting to me. She's the girl, played by,
Yuriko Hoshimi.
Yes, Yuriko Hoshimi? Hishimi.
Hishimi.
Hishimi. Yuriko Hishimi, who is, she is sort of the poster girl for the Ultra franchise. Like, I mean, she's cute as a button, especially with that little short hairdo she has at a certain point. That little almost pixie cut.
Yeah. I my ignorant self wants to call it a bob, and I'm pretty sure anyone who knows anything about haircuts just screamed at the mic, so.
Yeah, I don't think that's, yeah. But that being said, she is very, she's a great expansion on the girl archetype, like Fuji type character from the previous show. Which, that actress, the actress who played Fuji in Ultraman, I think she's kind of wasted, unfortunately, because I saw her, you know, you watch her in Ultra Q, and she's so much more interesting and compelling in that, as opposed to Ultraman, where she sort of doesn't get to do a whole lot and has a lot of unfortunate sexism thrust upon her.
She is, for the time, a great female character. But she still is really into dresses and jewelry and looking pretty, and that's a key part of her character. And you're right, it's nice to see a character who is a female who's moved past that quite a bit more.
Which, in fairness, let's be clear, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, but as you said, it's kind of, it's the go-to archetype for a lot of this stuff. And, actually, I will say as a caveat, Ultraman X, while it is one of my favorite shows, episode 3 is kind of a stinker, because one of them, that show has a, they have a, their weapons expert and their marksman is a girl, and she's actually very young, and she's a martial artist. She is their, like, she is their boots on the ground fighter, and she's the one who gets in, like, kick fights with aliens and stuff. And there's a whole, and all of episode 3, she is fussing about shoes. And she's basically reduced to a complete dullard. And honestly, I found the episode to be pretty offensive. And which is such a, it's such a shame, because the rest of that show is so choice. And there's even some really great feminist, not, I wouldn't say like super progressive stuff, but there's some actual, like, no joke, decent feminist stuff going on in some of the episodes in that show.
Honestly, though, that seems to be a relatively recurring issue with the Ultra franchise. And, I mean, let's be honest, Japanese media in general is not always the most progressive. Because, like, you see in Ultraman Max, they have that same character. She's a badass. She is the resident badass, and she regularly turns into a weepy lady at the drop of a hat because, oh my dear lady. Lord. Or the main character, the main, actually kind of main character of Ultraman Orb is, she has some agency and more interesting character personality hallmarks, which makes her more fun to watch, but she's still a very much a girly girl. The only one I've seen that didn't have that character in it was Geed. And that's just because it's that character is either a secret agent or a badass sword lady.
Right. Which again, like, my wife and I often describe it as, and again, like you said, it's fairly common in a lot of Japanese media. They're trying to have their cake and eat it too. Because they want to have, like, cool lady characters. But because Japanese audiences have these very specific expectations and these very specific demands, because they want their media to be very safe and very consumable, as a result, you get, like, some kind of cringy stuff. Like, for example, in Ultraman Tiga, the commander is actually a woman. She's their base commander. She is their superior officer. She does most of her commanding from the, from their base. She doesn't typically go out very much, but that's because she's really good at delegating. And she's a fun character, but she wears these dick-stomping stiletto heels everywhere. And I'm like, why? I mean, she's beautiful, and her those heels are doing everything. Heels are doing everything for me. But maybe not in a military setting, is what I'm saying, where you're fighting monsters. But anyway, anyway, so on the subject of Anne, I thought it was very interesting because in the Japanese version, she's a very competent character. She's very rarely paid for laughs, very rarely like a ditz. She's very professional. She's very smart and very capable. She's not really a combatant the way that the rest of them are. She's their medic, as opposed to Fuji, who was just the comms lady. But unfortunately, I remember this. I remember even as a kid watching this in the dub. The dub is mean to her. Like, treats her like shit.
That would like, not the dub. Me.
There's an episode where, okay, it's in the marked town, the targeted town, whatever you want to call it. The Metron Sagen episode with the sunset and everything. She is, Dan tells her, hey, I'm going to go in here and check this place out. I need you to stay out here as backup in case something happens so you can call in, you can call it in case something goes wrong. And she's like, okay. So I remember, like, that was all it was in the Japanese version. It was just like, okay, he asked her to do a thing. She's doing a thing. And then when she sees a friggin' flying saucer come out of the building, she's like, oh crap, I got to call this in. And it's like, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. In the dub, the narrator starts talking about how she really wanted to not do what Dan says and go help him, but would she help him or would she just get in the way? And I'm like, wow, go fuck yourself.
That is because for all that we talked about Japanese media having questionable history when it comes to its female characters, so does America.
Yeah, it's almost like two sides of the same coin in a lot of ways. But that being said, Anne is just like a classic. She herself is a legacy character. Like, she has action figures just of her. She's actually presented. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the legacy of Seven. I mean, like I said, we've been at this for almost an hour. In Ultra 7 is actually considered the most popular character next to Ultraman himself, and in some ways surpassing him. He has appeared in tons of stuff, especially in recent memory. He was the first Ultraman to actually have partner monsters. Yep. He's got his little capsule monsters, which apparently the creator of Pokemon does partially credit for inspiring him a little bit. He was a big Ultraman fan growing up. That's a thing you fucking anime nerds need to understand, is how much Ultraman has influenced all of the shit that you consume. You know how all these American creators and American filmmakers and comic artists and stuff, they all bang on endlessly about Star Wars. Like, oh, I went to Star Wars. That's what Ultraman is for Japan. Like, anyway, I got it out of my system. There's a series, and I hope they put it out on Blu-ray in the States. I don't think it'll happen, because I don't know if they have the rights to the show, but there were two sequel series, or three possible sequel series to Ultra 7. Like, just Ultra 7. Not sequels to Ultraman, just to Ultra 7. There was the Heisei Ultra 7 series, which is it's a direct sequel, as I understand it. I'm bringing it up now. It's a direct sequel. It was an original video, like direct-to-video, also TV specials. And it's about... it ignores everything else. Because Ultra 7 is actually supposed to be standalone until later it was retconned to be revealed that Ultraman and Ultra 7 are in the same continuity. But this sequel series pretends like Ultra 7 is the only Ultra to ever come to Earth. And... Then, actually, my buddy Ryuki Kitaoka was the suit actor for Ultra 7 in the Heisei series.
Well, I want to say that there were... So I was looking it up, and I want to say there were several movies as well for Ultra 7, right? Like, made-for-TV specials.
Or yeah, that's movies. What I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Are these original video, like, made-for-TV movies that later the follow-up episodes were all released on VHS. And that series, like I said, it's apparent, I actually have them all, but they are not subtitled, and I have no idea what's happening. I have a general idea, because they actually revisit a couple of alien plot lines, like, oh yeah, this alien race that was completely wiped out, except there's one still loose on Earth somewhere, and this comes back to him where, like, there's this episode, I think, comes back to him where it's like he's been planning revenge this whole time, which I think is really fun. In addition, there was a series called Ultra 7X that is also sort of a sequel, but what it is it's about Ultra 7 going to another universe, another dimension, and joining with a character in that dimension. And for some reason, going into this dimension and joining with this other character changes his look, actually makes him look super badass and really angular, and gives him these big shoulder pads and stuff. He looks dope. But yeah, and there's a couple of little cameos in that series too that are really sweet, and it made me really happy. Well, so
he shows up in a lot of other shows too, because I know he shows up.
Oh yeah,
in Ultraman and Return of Ultraman for a bit. He was in the Ultraman Orb movie, which, admittedly, my son, like, his mind exploded. It was the first time I've seen him like truly be flabbergasted by a media thing. And just watching him, awesome. I was like, oh my god, that's Ultra 7.
Seven.
Yep,
seven.
Started singing the song.
Well, that was what was so... Yeah, when they were doing the like, seven. Oh, that gag kills me every time they do it. But yeah. So you were saying?
Oh, just that Ultra 7 seems to be the first Ultraman that's kind of... He's that kickoff to the broader universe of the Ultra franchise. When they started going like, yeah, no, they're all related tertiarily at least.
Yeah.
And I also really want them to do the Heisei Ultra Sevens, but just because I want them to do all of the Worthy Ultra shows. And I'm kind of intrigued to see where they go, because so far they've either released the original franchise shows in the like in order, and then they've been releasing not quite what's on right now, but like Geed, I think, was 2018. So it's not it's not that old. It's relatively new stuff. And I'm wondering, are they going to meet in the middle? And like with all of those OVAs that they made, I'm curious to see how Mill Creek handles that when you start getting really into the deep cut Ultra stuff instead of just the mainline television series.
Yeah, I'm wondering the same thing myself, because, you know, we're going to eventually start getting into stuff like, are they going to do Ultraman Towards the Future? Because, like I said, that was the Australian series. Or are they going to do Ultraman The Ultimate Hero, which was the only, to date, the only live-action American-produced Ultraman show that was not aired in America because it was so bad that the television networks all passed on it.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and say I'm okay with them not doing that one then.
I mean, Ultraman The Ultimate Hero is also called Ultraman Powered in Japan. What's funny is again, it's an all-American cast and production. The guy who plays Ultraman in that one is... he's played by Kane Kosugi, who is a Japanese-American actor who was also in Godzilla Final Wars. He's also a ranger in a Super Sentai show. The monsters are all based on classic Ultraman monsters, and they're all redesigned by Masahiro Maeda, who was the character designer for Shin Godzilla and the Gamera trilogy in the 90s. They're like really awesome monster redesigns. The problem is that the suits they made for the monsters are so delicate they can't actually fight. So Ultraman will basically come up and push them really kind of gently. Be like, ah, gotcha. So anyway, anything else you wanted to discuss? I feel like I kind of dominated there for the last couple of minutes.
No, that's okay. Not really. I think that as we start getting into some of the next shows, I'll probably have a little bit more, just because the character work starts to become a little bit more interesting. And also, with them starting to figure out the tech and their rhythm, like, I have unreasonably high expectations for Return of Ultraman and Ultraman Ace, just watching the trajectory they're building. So But as it is, I don't know, that's most of what I really want to cover. I still say that I think this is one of my favorite Ultraman designs. It still feels simple while still being clearly more military oriented. And that is one thing that tonally took me by surprise. For all that, you know, probably 3/4 of the Ultra shows have ultimately revolved around a military or pseudo-military group that I've seen. This is the first one I've seen where that felt real. Like, this is clearly an international organization. They have characters show up who are important in other aspect parts of the world in this organization. And I know the original Ultraman had that too. But I think that with the additional good design work they have with all of their costumes, although I will tell you that the helmets they wear look like boobs. Didn't realize this until I was halfway into the show and my wife pointed it out. And after she pointed it out, I couldn't not see it in the opening credits every single time. But yeah, I think this is easily one of the best designed Ultra series. It's really cool seeing them start to play with stuff that would become hallmarks of the franchise over the years. Now my biggest curiosity is how did they go from this to everybody having tchotchkes everywhere and fusing 4 different ultra powers together and just all that jazz.
I will say, I don't want to necessarily spoil things for you, but let's just say at a certain point, Bandai buys a majority share in the company. And you will see the line of demarcation when that happens. Right.
I'm ready.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it. Aaron, thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for helping me keep Gigantacast going. I've got a lot of really fun plans, actually, because now that everyone's kind of working from home and everyone's kind of locked down, everyone is at my disposal. I'm actually planning on doing some commentary tracks for stuff. So if you're interested in doing some commentaries, I've got Mayhem's Muse on the horn to maybe do something. Got hoping I can get Brandon from Austin Books to help me out too. You got anything off the top of your head?
I aggressively want to talk about at some point in the near future the 3 Gamma Millennium movies, just in some way.
You're killing me right now.
Those are like my holy grail of giant monster films. I think that they are some of the best that have ever been produced. And to find out that they're coming out, I did make noises I usually save in the bedroom. So I'm very excited to talk about those myself.
Well, I appreciate that, sir. I kind of want to trade places with you because I am currently on my 3rd rewatch of Guardian of the Universe in the last week because I am desperately trying to do a professional sounding commentary track, and hoo boy, it's taken me more work than I thought it would. So you know, we'll see how that shakes out.
And I have one call out, if only because I've talked around it. So I have a question to ask you, and it's going to be loaded. So, Gary,
okay.
What is your favorite Ultraman design? Doesn't have to be like an overall character. But just like your flat out any one ultra form, since that's a thing on the newer shows, like what is your favorite Ultraman design?
That's so hard to say because I'm so much more of a monster guy.
That's fair.
It honestly really kind of depends because I'm going to have to go with like a top 3 or something. My usual go-to just for favorite Ultraman overall is actually Ultra 7 Sun, Ultraman Zero.
Okay.
Because more for his character, but I feel like his design reflects his character so well. He's a very angular, very, very kind of, very, he's toned, he's kind of buff, but he's also very cocky, but he's also very friendly and sweet. And I just love his personality so much. And let me think. Another one for me is Ultraman Titus.
Okay.
Titus was the breakout character from Ultraman Taiga, which was the series from this past year. Taiga is the son of Ultraman Taro, but Titus was his... The gimmick of Ultraman Taiga was that there were three different Ultramen inhabiting one human.
Okay.
And they would all get into arguments inside of his head and stuff. It's actually extremely funny. Titus is super buff. Like, his whole gag is that he is incredibly built. Like more so than you would see for an Ultraman, and that's kind of the point of his character. They call him the Sage of Strength because he's actually, like, very wise and he's good at giving advice and stuff, but he's also, like, a sound mind requires a sound body. And he's doing squat thrusts all over the time, all the place. And, he's very fun, and I just love his design, too. Again, for me, it's a little more about personality, but I will say the last one that comes to mind is Ultraman The Next, which was from the movie that led into Ultraman Nexus. And The Next was a kind of a reboot character. It was a universe where Ultraman had not existed before. And they totally overhauled Ultraman fundamentally to have this very organic, almost looked like the silver bits looked like hardened, like, shell, like, oh, chitin armor.
Okay, that's and cool. That red, sounds up my alley.
Yeah, the red bits were almost like muscle. So he had a very, kind of like the Guyver. Do you remember the Guyver?
I do. I'm a huge fan of the Guyver.
Yeah, he had a very Guyver look to him. And he still looked like Ultraman. Like, he still looked very heroic and cool. But that design is just so unique, and I love it so immediately. So those are the top three that come to mind. So I'm very curious to see what your response are to those characters. Before we sign off, oh my god, we've almost been doing this for an hour and a half. Before we sign off, Ultraman Zero, Ultra Seven Sun, is coming back in this year's Ultraman. He will be the master of Ultraman Zet, who is the brand new Ultraman. The whole thing is going to be about Zero mentoring. Like, you know how with Geed, Zero wasn't... He was sort of a mentor, but he's more like a dorky big brother.
Yeah, he was like... he's just another Ultra character who shows up and ends up being a pretty big part.
Yeah, in this series, it's like, this is Zero's apprentice. And I love the fan art that's already been coming out. One artist I follow on Twitter made a comic, a little mini comic of Zero kicking in a door, wearing his new cape, which he stole from someone's closet. And he's holding his apprentice over his head, and he's screaming at Ultraman Leo, which was his master. And he said, "Master, look, I have an apprentice now!" And Leo is just, like, spitting out his tea because he's like, "No!" Because I remember telling that to Morgan, like, "Oh my god, Zero's got an apprentice now!" And she said, "Oh, that poor child!" So, anyway. Okay, I think we're done. Thank you very much, everybody. Y'all stay safe. Stay indoors. You know, we gotta ride this out. We gotta let the social isolation take. We gotta let it work. You have to let it work.
Yes, do that's how Netflix we're gonna get through watch this. Parties, do Skype calls. Do not have social distancing barbecues, which apparently is a thing where people all do that together and hang out. And I heard that and was like, no, you're missing the point.
Yeah, that's what I've heard from some friends of mine in the UK. Like, people were taking it as just an excuse to have an extended holiday. So, they eventually had to, I think they had to instill martial law or something in the UK. I'm not entirely sure. But, apparently the law, the penalty for breaking quarantine in the UK is like 30 pounds, which is what, $45, as opposed to over here, which is $1,000 or jail time.
Which lesson to learn is, instead of going out, mm-hmm. buy a Mill Creek Ultra Shell off of Amazon, and if the shipping is outrageous, go to Movie Spree and buy it there and watch some Ultraman.
Yeah, this is never a better time to binge media, people. Come on. All right. Thank you so much, and good night.